Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM subteam for Sunrise Data Review call held on Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2019 at 1800 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? And I do note that we have Claudio DiGiangi on the audio bridge. Do we have anybody else? Thank you. Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. In addition, please reminder to turn off your video camera if needed. It's down at the bottom on the left-hand side. In addition, we do have Julie and Ariel both sharing their screens. So if you would like to flip from Ariel to Julie or vice versa, please go to the top of your screen under View Options and choose the person's name whose screen you would like to see. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Great. Thank you very much, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. I'll just quickly run through the agenda. We'll have the updates to statements of interest, then an overview of the updated timeline and work plan. Then on to the development of preliminary recommendations, the continued discussion of Sunrise Charter Question 6 in conjunction with Proposals 2 and 4, discuss agreed Sunrise Charter Question 8, and if time permits, discuss agreed Charter Question 9 in conjunction with Proposal 13, and finally, number 4, any other business. May I ask if anyone has any other business?
Julie, it's Claudio. I do unless we cover it during the other topics.
I'm sorry, what was the other, what was the item?
So I left a couple things open from the last call, so we could cover it under any other business or, you know, at some point during the other discussion topics.
Okay, well, then please do speak up when you think it's an appropriate moment. Thank you.
All right, perfect, thank you.
And now I'd like to go to Ariel, who will give us an overview of the updated timeline and work plan.
Thanks very much, Julie. This is Ariel from staff. I just posted the timeline document in the chat, and you're free to scroll it on yourself. So to give you a quick overview, the timeline is designed to provide the subteam a clear understanding of the intended scope of work week by week, meaning which charter question to be reviewed to develop answers and related recommendations, and also which individual proposals should be reviewed in conjunction with that charter question. And on the screen, you should see there are three tables. So one table is for the review of individual proposal. The second is for the agreed charter question. The third is the overall sub-team plan for the weekly basis. And when we developed this plan with the sub-team co-chairs, the anticipated pace is for two meetings. The sub-team should finish reviewing one agreed charter question, meaning the draft answers should be developed, and also the related individual proposals also should be reviewed. And then you can see that this pace is being reflected in the intended scope of work in the third column, in the third table of this spreadsheet. But we're also keeping track of the actual work completed on a weekly basis, and that's reflected in the third column of the third table. And currently, the subteam is actually slightly ahead of schedule. But then we do note that some of the discussions of charter questions and individual proposals are pushed to the discussion thread, so they're not considered completed yet. But once they're completed and we have got the draft answers and the preliminary recommendations, then we will reflect that date in the actual completion date, which is the third column of table A and B. So you can see that we have already put some dates there. And so for the remaining work in the coming weeks, there is still quite a few number of charter questions the sub-team hasn't reviewed, and also the individual proposals. The goal is to get them finished before ICANN 65 if possible. But then based on our anticipated pace, it should complete that within ICANN 65. But this could happen sooner. So I will stop here and see if Julie, you have any additional comments.
Thank you very much, Ariel. This is Julie Heather from staff. Just to emphasize the last point again that Ariel made, if the sub-team can find some efficiencies in working in particular with the discussion threads, so carrying over some of the conversations onto the threads, also if the sub-team does get ahead of schedule, this will be noted, as Ariel said, in the actual work completed. And so we do know that it is the goal of the co-chairs to complete before ICANN 66. And of course, we'll do everything we can to support that goal. Thank you. Anybody have any questions or comments that they'd like to make?
Julie, this is
Julie.
I see Mary. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And so just to follow up on that as well, and to let the sub-team know that based on discussions with the sub-team co-chairs, both sub-teams actually, I should say, we know that this can be quite a lot of information to keep track of. So a couple of things. One is hopefully seeing this timeline in front of you will situate you, you know, as to where we are, where we're going, what we've done. And as Ariel said, staff will keep track of the progress each week. And the summary tables that you look at are updated for that purpose. But that towards the end of this process, sometime in late May or in June, perhaps, we haven't discuss this exactly with the co-chairs as to when that would be the appropriate time, but that whatever draft recommendations this sub-team as well as the other one comes up with, those will be extracted from the summary tables and placed into a single document, because that will then be the recommendations that each sub-team forwards to the full working group for their discussion. And so hopefully that's helpful as well. Thanks, everyone.
And thank you very much, Mary. And so let me go ahead now and turn things over to David McCauley. David, please.
Thanks, Julie. Hello, everyone. It's David McCauley speaking for the record. I was the chair on last week's call, and so Greg is going to be the chair in this call, but I'm going to begin with a very brief summary of what came out last week's call. We began with a discussion of Claudio's proposal number 9, which related to charter question 1 on possibly expanding the identical match requirement for Sunrise registrations. And Claudio's proposal, which was well presented and discussed, was based on elements of the ICANN approved launch plan for UniRegistry, and it basically encompassed the span the dot notion. And the examples Claudio gave, the wall.mart example, John McElwain gave the First National.bank example to illustrate the span the dot notion. It was a good discussion. We moved to charter question 5A on whether 30-day minimum Sunrise serves the intended purpose. Claudio again spoke and talked about additional notice. And in a couple of instances, Claudio mentioned that it would be good to run some of these past the IPC again. That's certainly fine, but I think I'll just make a personal note here. All of those kinds of efforts should be put on a very quick front burner kind of thing in the interest of getting to closure very quickly. We moved on to question 6, which is on SDRPs, and we mentioned the two proposals that George Kirikos had made that they encompassed a number of questions, but probably most closely aligned with charter question number 6. And Kathy mentioned a concern about our homework. And so it's another point where I will reiterate our homework is as stated, but we will also move forward sequentially with questions. So please do a little more than the annotated homework and be ready to move on if we have the opportunity to. Kathy made a very good point. We have to analyze the data. And on SDRP, she made the point that there is a lot of data that would support both trademark owners as well as third-party challengers. And so there's something we have to dig into here. Again, that's one of the things that the threads are there for. Both George in his written proposals and Jason stated the concern that gaming of the system is a real issue here with these SDRPs and to look at that. And I'll make a point that Greg made last week, and that is, unfortunately, no one's been using the threads. That actually is a statement in a sense. Maybe all of the discussion around these ideas has been made. But in any event, we need to move forward. ICANN 65 is not going to be a very good place to do the drafting of the document that Mary was just talking about. Our goal, and it's a personal goal of mine, is to beat that and to have this done and dusted. And I have a feeling that Greg and I will very soon be coming to the discussion room threads and saying, this is the sense of the room as far as we see it, and in an effort to try and come to closure. But remember, the threads are there, and they're a very good place in which to make a comment, make a proposal, try and move this thing along. Thanks very much. That's the end of my summary from last week's call. So I'll turn things over to Greg.
David, may I ask you a question? This is Kathy.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you. I think if I heard you say that Claudio presented proposal number one, but I think proposal number one is from George Kirkios. And so I'm not sure Claudio has any proposal in writing. And that's one of the questions that came up last week is he proposing a Sunrise B, which is what Uniregistry turns out to have done for only those registrants who had a Sunrise A. And so lots of questions were raised, but I think George had proposal number one. Thanks.
David, could I respond to Kathy's question?
I'm sorry, I was speaking into the mute, but Claudia, let me make one quick point. I messed up on the mute button. I spoke too quickly, Kathy. Claudio's proposal is number nine, and it relates to charter question number one. And that's what I meant to say. So, it is Claudio's proposal, and I think that part of the summary was accurate. I'm not really chairing, but let me go ahead, Claudio, take a real brief moment to speak, and then I should turn things over to Greg.
Sure. Thank you, Claudio, for the transcript. And that's what I was going to say, and I was just going to also add that it was submitted in writing through the SurveyMonkey forum, so that should be available for the team. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudio. Greg, over to you.
Thank you, David, and thank you all for the conversation so far. So now we get to the meat of things, which I believe takes us to question six and the related proposals number two and four. Maybe we should have lettered the proposals to avoid the confusion we just had, but we'll remember that for next time. So question six itself is very short, three parts though. A, what are Sunrise dispute resolution policies, and are any changes needed? B, are SDRPs serving the purposes for which they were created? And C, if not, should they be better publicized, better used, or changed? So before we get to the proposals, for this one, we don't yet have any draft answers to these questions. So I think we need to begin by discussing how we might answer these questions. So I will open the queue. And maybe we'll start with question 6A. I'm not sure if we need to answer the first part. What are Sunrise dispute resolution policies? Hopefully there's something we can use to answer that. I don't think we need to draft an answer to that. And the question, are any changes needed? And maybe we kind of answer that by looking at the proposals. And if we decide that any of the proposals pass muster, then I guess we can say that the changes are needed. And if none of them do, we either say changes aren't needed, or we say that maybe changes are needed, but we don't have any proposals for them, which seems a little bit like we're dodging a bullet. So perhaps we don't answer A right now, think about whether they're serving the purpose for which they're created and whether they should be better publicized. We can talk about those now if people have something to say. Otherwise, we can turn to the proposals, but let's see what people have to say about answering these questions. I'm not seeing any hands, but...
Greg, it's Claudio. I could say something.
Yeah, please go ahead, Claudio.
Yeah, and I may admit, maybe I misheard you, but I thought that George did submit something in writing. Maybe you were just referring to that, but I thought he did put something in based on the Unit Registry SDRP.
Yeah, so I said George did. There are two proposals on this, numbers 2 and 4, and we'll be discussing those. I just wanted to see before we got those whether we had answers, you know, direct answers to the questions.
Oh, I see. Okay.
See, I hope these things are coming up in the right order for me. I have Christine followed by Maxim.
Hi, this is Christine. So I think relating to question 6B, I think Mary said in the chat, and I agree with her, that when we put together the sort of Sunrise dispute resolution, there's information about that. So we can probably plop that in there. We know what the SDRP is. But I'm not sure that it's serving the purpose for which it was intended. And I've talked about this a little bit before, and I might be wrong. But so the STI and the IRT sort of included this idea of a Sunrise dispute policy was sort of included in the earlier drafts of the applicant guidebook. I mean, it was meant to be that if it was meant to remedy a situation when someone got a Sunrise registration kind of when they shouldn't have. However, when the TMCH wasn't fully fleshed out at that time. And so once the TMCH got going and they built up their systems and it became this sort of automated, like you submit the mark and they do a check and they check for use and then you, maybe they don't check for use for Sunrise, sorry, but they check for, you know, they check the mark and all sorts of validate the mark. And then they have a policy that basically says if something was not supposed to be in there, you can bring a dispute to us and you can challenge it, right, through our system. And so the SDRP, as organized by the complainant or by the registry operator, is sort of vestigial, right? I'm not really sure that it has any specific use at this point. I mean, everyone has to have one, so we do, but it basically kind of, they all address stuff that's already covered. And so some people say like, well, I mean, what if we allocated the domain name wrong specifically in an end date Sunrise? So some of the SDRPs specifically go to how we're going to solve allocation issues. But I think a lot of registries just sort of like ticked a box on that. And so when we talk about, is it serving its intended purpose? I don't know that it is, because I think it's in some ways obsolete, but I think it could be more useful, you know, to deal with maybe other concerns that people have about the way registries might allocate or register Sunrise names. So I'm just going to throw that out as a launch for a discussion, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. That's certainly food for thought. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim, also for the record. Actually, I think we have a bit of an issue because SDRPs are per TLD policies. So I'm not sure it's in our scope to decide what to do with the particular policies of particular TLDs. So the question might have answer, yes, there are multiple TLD policies, at least one per each, I mean SDRP. And are they serve purpose? We might have 1,000 answers as it's per TLD. Thanks.
Greg, it's Claudio. Can I jump in here at some point?
Yeah, Claudio, please go ahead.
So, in picking up with what Christine mentioned, I think part of the challenge is that if there is a Sunrise registration that was obtained perhaps through fraud on the trademark office and then used to register a domain name, the question is who will bring the complaint? And in other words, we've talked about, I think Jason talked about an example when this occurred, but in order for the process to be triggered, somebody actually has to bring a complaint. Presumably, it would be a registrant that wanted that particular domain name and then went to go register it and saw that it was not available and it was already registered. But otherwise, if it was just sort of brought to light and no one was interested in that particular domain name or at least interested enough to use the procedure, then the mechanism's not going to be used. So I just think that's another wrinkle in terms of when we're looking at whether it's serving its intended purpose, that you know, it really involves someone having to take that extra step and going through the process. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudio. I think I have David McCauley next. David, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
I'm struggling with my mute button. It's almost broken. But Kathy was before me in the queue, and so I was asking if Kathy would like to go ahead, and then I'll speak. I'm sorry for the delay.
Oh, no problem. Kathy, why don't you go ahead?
Terrific. Can you hear me, Greg?
You are here. Great. Thanks.
Okay, great. You know, Zoom does have better audio. I have to give it that. Okay, so I'm just going to read from one SDRP that exists for .shop and then go back to our data. So just a reminder, SDRPs serve two purposes. One is an improper Sunrise registration. The other is an improper denial of a Sunrise registration. Both interesting and important. For the improper Sunrise registration, the original intent of this provision, as I remember it, was that if the registries did limit Sunrise registrations to certain categories of goods and services, which they are allowed to do, so .pizza would only accept Sunrise registrations from Trademark Clearinghouse for pizza, restaurants, etc., eating, dining. Then this would be the opportunity for Joe's to, or if there was a Macy's pizza, to, you know, go out to say, hey, that's really where I should be. Let me read some of the information which confirms what Christine was saying. So this is from our column 2 in the summary table of final agreed Sunrise questions, data, and discussions. SDRPs do not seem to serve the purposes for which they were created. Based on Deloitte's responses, some subteam member believes it's a problem when a third party would not receive the claims. So you have a timing problem with the claims notice. By the time you get the claims notice and you want to do an SDRP, you've got the Sunrise period's over and the SDRP is over. But some, you know, we do seem to have groups that are using SDRPs. AFNIC had 2 SDRP disputes. So a question to Maxim, whether his group, you know, whatever word you want, Greg, whether his registries use SDRP, whether SDRP is valuable, and whether we should go in and edit these. And again, the note that the SDRP was based on the openness of the Trademark Clearinghouse. Thanks. Oh, and that was in my personal capacity.
Thank you, Kathy. Yes, and in the subteams, we assume you're speaking in your personal capacity. And so now we're back to David McCauley.
Thank you, Greg. And I would like to make a comment, and I'm the preface it by saying I'm speaking in my personal capacity here, not as co-chair. I want to suggest an answer to question 6C, actual text, and I'm going to go ahead and put it in a thread later today or probably tomorrow. I've got a lot of, never mind, I'll do it tomorrow. But let's just review. Question 6A says, what are Sunrise dispute resolution policies and are any changes needed? I'll refer to that changes in just a bit. B, are SDRPs serving the purpose for which they were created? And C, this is the question I want to address. If not, should they be better publicized, better used, or changed? I suggest my answer that we say we're not going to answer the bit about changed in 6C because it's asked in 6A up above. As to better used, I don't think that's any of our concern. That's really for registries on and claimants to the SDRP process. I don't know how we could answer whether they should be better used. And then the first question, should they be better publicized, is contingent on whether we find they serve the purpose. I think we should answer this by saying whether they serve the purpose or not, there's really nothing harmful by having a monthly or a quarterly reminder that the SDRPs exist and you should go and read this document to see what they provide. I'll put it in a thread, but I'm trying to get to something concrete, personally trying to get to something concrete. And that's my comment. And I will now go back on mute if it works. Thanks.
Thank you, David. There's a fair amount going on in the chat. I think Kathy and David, those are old hands. So I think I have Maxime again.
Maxime also, but for the record, I just want to clarify my answer. The thing is, if we are talking about the historical experience in this round, how SDRP worked, if any, yet, if it worked at all, we have to understand that fully analyze this question as it's different per each TLD. Some registries might have the same SDRPs, but they still per TLD they own. And they're independent. I mean, each TLD is independent from each other. And registries which are not affiliated with others do not have responsibility to follow what others do or not to follow. So to fully answer this question, we will have to analyze each and every SDRP and all the anecdotal data. I'm not sure we have enough time for that. And I don't think it's in our scope, because if policies were violated and compliance was the mechanism to use in this. Because if it's not used and there were no signs that it was not, that particular registries violated genus or policies or clauses of contract, I'm not sure we know what we're talking about. We will spend too much time on this, because to say yes, it was a requirement for every registry to have an SDRP. It's a requirement. And real SDRP policies are, I'd say, implementation from registry side. If we're talking about implementation, analyzing of the requirement doesn't give us much, I'd say. Thanks.
Greg, can I get in the queue? It's Claudia.
I've got Christine and then Claudia. Christine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Dorain. So the applicant guidebook was really clear about what the at a minimum what a registry's SDRP has to contain. And then as Susan put in the chat, the RPM's requirements also says at a minimum what an SDRP must contain. So I think we're not talking here about the additions. A registry operator can absolutely add more to the list. I was responsible for developing the National Arbitration Forums, or Forum now. They're sort of SDRP template that registry operators could adopt if they wanted to. And there's some sections that were sort of required. And there were some, then there was sort of like the tick a box if you want these sections to apply or if they apply to you. And that goes to what Kathy said. One of those additional terms could be that you had some additional registry specific sunrise restrictions that weren't met, or if you had some, you know, if you had a different date restriction on which sunrise SMD files you would take, those sorts of things. So they can be customized, absolutely, and I don't believe that that is up for this group's discussion. I 100% agree with Maxime on that. I think the only piece for discussion is sort of this required bit that we have that registry operators have to implement. For instance, I'm going to read you one of the elements. So the complaint must, this is one of the required elements that all SDRPs must contain. The complainant must prove one or more of the following elements if this is the disputed complaint. At the time the challenge domain name was registered, the registrant did not hold a trademark registration of national effect. Okay, that goes to whether or not the mark should have even been in the trademark clearinghouse to start with. And that is something that gets adjudicated using the TMCH dispute policy that I posted a link to in the chat. So my point is that is a requirement. When the next round opens, if we keep the applicant guidebook the same, registry operators will be required to have that part of their SDRP. And it doesn't make sense because the TMCH is handling those sorts of disputes. So it's not about the parts of the SDRP that are open and flexible for any registry operator to adopt. It's about the mandatory parts that I think is within our scope, and we should take a look and see if it does or does not make sense. That's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make. I think we have a distinction here. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. Claudia.
Yes, thanks. It's Claudia for the transcript. And I think I agree with what Christine was just saying there. The one issue I could see is if there was a mark that was not of national effect and it shouldn't have been in the clearinghouse, but it was used to register a domain during sunrise, that registration, I guess there sort of would need to be a process, because even if you went to the TMCH and said this trademark record should not be in the clearinghouse, was already registered. I would think it would just remain registered. I'm not sure if there's a process for the TMCH to notify the registry of that. So it's possible that that's why that's in the SDRP. The other points I was going to make was that this issue certainly impacts some important topics. It was created, I believe, the purpose of it was to really ensure the integrity of the Sunrise procedure, which is really for bona fide trademark owners. And if there is gaming going on, I think that's why that procedure was put in place. And so I think it is an important issue. From the trademark owner perspective, I think what the issues are is that it sort of goes to potentially the confidentiality of which trademarks are in the clearinghouse. And I'll give an example. I just noticed that in one of the recent TLDs that finished its sunrise period, I think just yesterday, .inc, if you go to the registry's website, they are publishing the list of domains that were registered during sunrise. And there's over 100 or so registrations listed there, and it clearly shows which trademarks were registered during the period. And so it seems like the registries are able to do that, unless that was some sort of non-compliance with their registering that list. So I think the issue then sort of relates to whether that's something that we think should happen across all the TLDs, and what impact it's going to have on the trademark clearinghouse confidentiality. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudia. So if I can sum up a little bit here, I think what we're making some distinctions. First, that what we're looking at is the mandatory portion of the SDRP, or the baseline of the SDRP, and not at any customized or VIP or extra bells and whistles that may have been added by individual registries. So to kind of answer Maxim's question in the chat, there's one baseline SDRP, and many of the SDRPs out there also have variations. So there's at least that number of variations. So I think we're looking really at just the baseline. And I also see the distinction between using the SDRP to challenge the application and using the trademark clearinghouse DRP, or whatever it's called, to go after the underlying record in the trademark clearinghouse. And that, you know, one could do one and not the other, but would only have effect in the one arena. The SDRP would only affect the particular application that was being challenged, and the TMCH matter would only affect the underlying record. So you really would have to do both if you wanted to both eradicate the record and nullify the trademark, or nullify the Sunrise registration. You know, raises the question whether something more streamlined could be done there, but that may not be a question we want to touch. The basic questions, you know, going back to, is it serving the purpose for which they're created? And it seems that there's, you know, maybe some publicity problems that goes also to the third question. And you know, also some questions about whether there's, you know, adequate information to allow people to commence an SDRP if they, you know, don't know what the underlying trademark was. You know, it depends on the ground. And I suppose one could do research outside the TMCH to see whether there is, you know, a trademark registration anywhere that matches the Sunrise. That's a possibility, but, you know, clearly if there is information, if more information was coming out of the TMCH, then, you know, it'd be easier to mount a challenge. I'm not sure where that leaves us in terms of kind of separation of work between TMCH issues and Sunrise issues, but that kind of seems to be where we're at. Not that we have nothing to look at here, but that we have, you know, a scope, limited scope in terms of what Sunrise we're looking at, and then we have issues regarding information flow. And I guess one of the things we don't know, and I'll ask staff if they know or if there's a way to know, is, you know, how many SDRPs were commenced in total across all of the new GTLDs, and is there any, are they listed anywhere in one place? It's a little hard to discuss whether it serves the purpose without knowing what happened in the cases that did exist. Of course, you know, some of the points we've made go to the cases that didn't exist because there wasn't enough information to start them. So I see the chat coming up here. So Susan answers my question, no, because they operate at the registry level. Maxim says plus one. Greg, it might be the best question about this subject. Christine Durain informs me her hand is up. I'm trying to keep all these different windows open at the same time, and unfortunately they don't all stay all open at the same time. So I will call on Christine. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine. Yeah. So I do want to clarify, I think maybe that the only concern I have, and I think I take your point that the trademark clearinghouse is not really within the scope of this specific group, and that's fine. But my suggestion is if you look at the what is required in the applicant guidebook for registry operators to implement, the four elements, I put them in the chat. If you strip out all of the three that the registry operator can control, you're left with maybe one, which is B, which is number two. The domain name is not identical to the mark in which the registrant based its Sunrise registration. So then, I mean, the registry operator could presumably be on the hook for allocating a domain name in Sunrise that wasn't an exact match. Other than that, the SDRP requirements themselves don't make sense. We cannot go and look at, I agree with Maxine, we cannot go and look at SDRP decisions because they're not aggregated in one place. They're specific to registry operators. I don't even recall, I don't think there's a requirement that registry operators even publish the decisions if they take them. And so I think that some people use the forum. The forum offers sort of a templated policy and customized, and so I believe some of theirs might be published if there were any, but I thought that the answer was that the forum hadn't had any of those disputes. So I think my point is just taking a look at the SDRP when we want to think about remedies that brand owners have or that people, registrants have, against unlawful Sunrise registrations. Is the SDRP an effective remedy? I think probably not as written and required. That doesn't mean that registry operators aren't making it effective and aren't doing something with it that is more effective. But as written and as required, I don't think it's effective. And I don't think it requires a lot of additional research to take a look at the plain wording of what the applicant guidebook requires. And maybe this is something we punt to the subpro. But it just seemed to me that at some point we should discuss sort of, if we're talking about ways to fix the Sunrise process, is SDRP one of those ways? And that was my point. Thanks.
Thank you, Christine. So that's very helpful. Maxim says, I'm against adding a requirement to use form to the SDRP. I'm not sure that was what was being suggested, but I don't think we want to, you know, have single providers. Or anything. So I don't know if we should recommend or consider recommendation that SDRP's results should be published and aggregated. Something to think about out of all of that. Kathy, let's go over to you, please.
Hi, thanks, Greg. And your summaries have been great. But Christine, I think there's something more. So I'm reading from the applicant guidebook, and I seem to have different numbering than you do, Christine. So I'm reading from early applicant guidebook, and it's section 6.2.4. Sunrise service is section 6.2. I agree completely with Christine that a lot of it's very basic and high level, and that a lot of it probably doesn't involve us. But there is something that concerns me. And you know, from the perspective of, you know, representing, and I do, believe it or not, I do represent trademark owners, I do represent businesses from time to time, not this year at Princeton. Okay, so 6.2.4, what troubles me here is my right to exercise my rights under the applicant guidebook, kind of the right to standing, and do I have what I need in order to bring a challenge. So let me read, and sorry, it's long. The proposed SDRP must allow challenges based on at least the following four grounds. One, at time the challenge domain name was registered, the registrant didn't hold a mark of national effect. We've talked about that one. That the domain name two is not identical to the mark. Three, the trademark registration was not national effect. And four, the trademark registration on which the domain name registrant based its Sunrise did not issue on or before the effective date of the registry agreement. So we didn't want trademarks So trademarks had to be a certain age before they went in the trademark clearinghouse or before they were eligible for Sunrise. We didn't want things that were created the month before, and that was built into the applicant guidebook. But how do I exercise my rights under the SDRP to bring a challenge if I can't go into the trademark clearinghouse and say, hey, can you help me confirm? I do believe that this is not the right X, Y, and Z, but you've got it registered in the trademark clearinghouse. So how do we create enough access to the trademark clearinghouse to at least allow this right of challenge? That would seem to be, you know, an operational fix that would then make the SDRP usable by those people who want to use it for challenging. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I think that's a very valid, useful set of questions. We certainly don't want people just going on fishing expeditions, you know, because they have a suspicion or they can't get information. So it is somewhat of a puzzlement. I'm even puzzling at what the difference is between ground one and ground three. And maybe somebody who had another cup of coffee that I didn't yet have can mention that. But it does seem like there's, certainly there's an issue the way the SDRP and the TMCH intermesh. And I wasn't suggesting when I was talking about kind of lines between different groups that we should have high walls here because it's all part of the same working group in the end. And we should be able to answer questions that span different subtopics. And those conversations, to my mind, can kind of start anywhere. It can start in the sub-team here, and everything has to go up to the working group anyway. So I was not trying to quash a discussion of the trademark clearinghouse, although to some extent, obviously, we may not be able to answer that question in this group, but it's at least something we can float back up to the full WG. So let's see if we have any hands. I see Maxim followed by Susan.
Maxim Malzoba for the record. Also, I'd like to remind us all that typical data retention periods of 3 years are over for lots of registries. I mean, for registry agreements which had sunrises 3 years ago and something on the top, and that historical data might not be available. And the second thing, yeah, registers cannot look into TMCH and are not responsible, for example, for inaccessibility of services of TMCH or mistakes made by a software platform or something like that. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. That's an interesting point about the data, and I guess it creates to some extent the question of whether there's a statute of limitations on these matters. Obviously, UDRPs are filed a long time, sometimes after, certainly after the registry, after the trademark and the domain were registered. But if, you know, data retention is an issue, that could, you know, could raise an issue after time. I'm not sure that I would think there would be any registry liability if any of this doesn't work, but it's, you know, we can put a pin in that thought. Susan?
Hi, yeah, thanks, it's Susan Payne here. I think, Kathy, you were talking about challenging the Trademark Clearinghouse records, and I may well have misunderstood you, but there is a challenge process at the TMCH. This is what Christine has been saying. So if you're wanting to challenge whether the mark which has been used for a sunrise registration was really one that should validly have been available for use, that challenge process is offered by and operated by the TMCH and has been used as far as I know. So I think that we have that there already, what you're looking for, but I may well have misunderstood what you were saying, and if so, I apologize.
Susan, before you go ahead, I think what Kathy was saying is that in order to institute a Sunrise DRP, there is information that is uniquely within the Trademark Clearinghouse that you would need in order to essentially identify whether you have a valid complaint to make. And that without knowing what trademark registration of national was in the clearinghouse, there'd be no way to start the case. So it's not a question of challenging this goes back to that other bifurcation I was discussing. There's two DRPs that kind of speak to the same underlying issue of a bad TMCH record. One challenges a Sunrise registration that was based on a bad record, and the other one challenges the bad record itself. So that I think is, and you know, we're focusing more, I think, on the SDRP and the fact that the SDRP requires some knowledge of a bad record. And if you have no knowledge of the record in the first place, you can't know whether you have a bad record to base an SDRP on. So sorry to interrupt you and to preempt Kathy's response to whom it was directed. Go ahead, please, Susan.
That's good. Thank you very much.
Greg, can I get in the queue, Claudia?
Yes, you may get in the queue. I believe the next person in the queue is Kathy, unless I said everything she would have said. I see her hand is down, so maybe I did justice.
You did. Thank you, Greg.
So good. Thank you. That coffee's kicking in then. But I still can't figure out the difference between rounds 1 and 3. Claudio, please go ahead.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to compare this to how this might work in the real world in the trademark context, where there was a product that was trademarked and that was confusingly similar to an existing mark, and what the trademark owner would do in that context. The way I'm coming at this is that that you're right, you and Kathy are correct, that if the trademark clearinghouse was fully open, that would help. But I think that's going to be a pretty big bridge to cross because of the confidentiality issue. So I'm wondering if another way of approaching it is, and pointing to what the .inc registry did, was they published a list of domains that were registered during Sunrise. And so if you're a potential registrant and you're interested in a specific domain in that TLD, if you could see which domains were registered during the Sunrise period, I'm not sure if you would really need to go into the clearinghouse to examine which mark was registered, because what you could do, and this is what happens in the trademark context, is you would then search to see across the different trademark registries, and WIPO has a database, and most of the trademark offices have open databases that can be searched. So if a registrant saw that a particular mark was registered during the Sunrise period, and perhaps they thought, well, that word can't legitimately be a trademark, they then could go and search the trademark databases to see if there are registrations for that mark. And that would help inform their decision. If they came across a registration that looks frivolous, they could then decide, based on all the information, that they want to challenge that registration. So that could be an approach without having to open up the TMCH for this purpose. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudio. So I guess the essence of what you're saying is that we could consider recommending that all SDRP, or that all Sunrises really, publish a list of the Sunrise registrations at the end of the period. Thus providing at least somewhat of a hook to at least think about whether you had a challenge. And then you need to look at underlying trademark registrations as opposed to the TMCH. But at least you wouldn't have, at least you'd know what fish were in the barrel before you started trying to shoot them.
Exactly.
Kathy, your hand is up.
Yeah, question for Claudio, because I'm looking at .inc and I'm not seeing the list. I know it's there, I'm just not finding it. Claudio, what information, before I don't want to launch based on, a discussion based on incorrect information. What did .inc publish? And is it just the trademark itself, or is it information about the trademark owner, the jurisdiction, the date of registration, anything else?
I am trying to pull up the link. I think it's get.inc/companies. And so they published the domain name and they have a little logo there to identify the trademark owner. So again, it doesn't go into which registration, but that could be, that would have to be ascertained independently.
Wait, so you could tell who the trademark owner is, so at least you know the name of the company?
Yes.
Interesting. I wish I could see it. A logo may... It seems to me that, and I'd like to, maybe we should table this to look at the list that Claudia is talking about, but it seems to me, you know, if you look at the zone file, all you're going to see is the domain name registered. So you don't know which trademark owner it is, because potentially a myriad of trademark owners have registered that word in a myriad of different trademark offices around the world for different categories of goods and services. So even if you could find a registration, how do you know it's that one? And then how do you know the dates? Like, you know, if you're trying to show priority, that the trademark, you know, the registry said they didn't want trademarks created yesterday. They want trademarks that are at least 2 years old. My trademark, I'm the challenger, my trademark is 14 years old. Your trademark is 2 days old. Get out. That's why you go to the trademark clearinghouse. So the question is how we create one-shot deals, I think, to go to the trademark clearinghouse with some kind of, you know, good faith showing, you know, presumably short, that says, I should be entitled to get some basic information about this trademark clearinghouse registration so I can exercise my rights to challenge under the SDRP. And as likely as another trademark owner, or certainly as another business owner of sorts, you'd have something you'd be able to show very easily. Thanks. So creating that right of access to the fastest way to get the cleanest data.
Greg, can I reply?
Yeah, go ahead, Claudio, and then I've got a question, I think. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Kathy, you're right. It would not provide the specific registration. But, you know, I recall, and the reason I'm mentioning this is just because I recall this was really, I don't know, heavily debated, but it was significantly debated during the last process where these were developed, and the concern was around the confidentiality of what marks trademark owners put in the clearinghouse and really just the whole confidentiality around that. So what would, but you're right. I mean, what would have to happen is you wouldn't know the specific mark, but if there was a word there, and again, this is probably just for a registrant who's interested in that particular string, they would see the trademark. They would know that that must have been registered as a trademark during the sunrise period. And then they would have to search the databases and see if there really are legitimate trademarks in there. And you would see the registration date for when those marks are registered. And so, you know, it's not a full 100% solution, but I'm just trying to thread the needle because I know there's just going to be difficulties with opening up the TMCH. Thank you.
Thanks, Claudio. I'm looking at the Get Inc. Companies page, which displays the logo of the company registrations, and I wonder if they have a license to use the logo. The name would be not an issue, but they're using the logo, so interesting to know. Then they show the trademark underneath. So they've got Beyonce.inc and Intuit.inc and other recognized names. And oddly enough, Hanes Brands is listed as having registered Nerder Inc. I don't understand that, but I have to look at the registry. So I guess there's no GDPR issue here because there's no personal data at this point. But you do at least have the company data. But then again, there's a whole question about whether the organization information is somehow too sensitive to list, but I guess that's being raised more in the question of who is. Maybe it will not infect pages like this until later on, or maybe Ireland will object. In any case, I guess we have to think about how this information works, whether this is, in essence, kind of a minimum data set of something that would allow people to go forward and make an actionable SDRP claim. So I think I've got Maxim followed by Kathy. Maxim, please go ahead.
Maxim Mazoba for the record. I have a simple question. As I understand, and as per AGB, the sunrise is for those entities which are effectively clients of TMCH. They paid for entries to be added to the database, and that's it. How are we going to extend it further? I'm not sure we have reasons to do so. If some entities decided not to participate in TMCH as users, why do we need to protect them? Because Sunrise is only for the trademark owners who have entries in the clearinghouse. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. I don't think we're thinking of extending the right to participate in Sunrise. I think that pretty much accepted at the moment, at least, that TMCH, having a TMCH record is the price of entry, so to speak, into the ability to use Sunrise. And not just the TMCH entry, but one that has been, where use has been validated. So I think that is your issue with the fact that the plaintiffs, so to speak, would not be in the SD, would not be in the trademark clearinghouse? Because I think the defendants, if you will, would all, if they're getting into the Sunrise, they should have an SMD file to get there. So they must be in the TMCH. So I'm not sure exactly what you're driving at in terms of the expansion of the pool of people involved or entities involved. I'll let Maxim chew on that, I guess, and go to Kathy. Kathy, please go ahead.
Sorry, Greg. I love these new screens. So several things, and maybe Claudia and I could take this offline, but. So first, in terms of the confidentiality, as he noted, trademarks are public filings in the vast majority of countries that we know. So when this issue was being debated in the STI, that was not considered, that was discussed. It was discussed extensively, and we chose not to make the TMCH confidential. There's nothing in the rules adopted by the GNSO Council or the board that made the TMCH confidential, because these were public records that were going in for the most part, which is why the Sunrise period didn't talk about, why the SDRP didn't talk about how you would challenge, what the challenger needed to get, because it was supposed to be public. You could query it from the TMCH database. So now that you can't, we're still back to the same question. How does the challenger exercise their rights? And so let me posit, and then I will put into writing, that someone who presumably has their own rights or can show that the, or has a valid reason for showing that the registrant in the Sunrise doesn't have. So if for example, the trademark's only 2 days old, that once you have kind of a basic showing, you can take it to the trademark clearinghouse and get back just that information. And the reason we know that just that information, basic information about one trademark registered in the trademark clearinghouse, is not absolutely inviolately confidential is because that's what is printed out in the trademark claims notice. So on a kind of on a need to know basis, you can access it anyway. That's what the notice is all about. We're spending a lot of time in the other subteam doing that. So how you can access kind of one shot so you can exercise your rights, get one registration trademark clearinghouse, might be something that would then allow both, all the rules now could make sense, both the SDRP and the TMCH. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. So it sounds like you may be heading toward a recommendation for kind of a single shot access to a record in the trademark clearinghouse for the purpose of seeing whether or not an SDRP would be well grounded. And I think there's some distinction to be made, and I'm saying this in a neutral hat-wearing perspective, there's something to be said for distinguishing between perhaps non-publicness and confidentiality. And I think the idea is not so much that each record is confidential, but that the totality of the records in the TMCH is not public. And you know, that's a discussion we've had at a different time about, you know, why that should be or why that shouldn't be. But I think that, you know, getting at an individual record, you know, if you were to say that if you had standing to pursue an SDRP, whatever, and we haven't really discussed standing, but assuming you have standing to pursue an SDR, a particular SDRP, and you know, that might be enough to allow you to look at a record in the SDRP to see whether it's kosher, or whether it's one that you need to, you know, would be the grounds to challenge the Sunrise registration. So just kind of, I'm musing here, but also trying to bring together our threads into actionable recommendations.
Yeah, Greg, could I respond to Kathy? It's Claudia.
Claudia, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say basically what you mentioned there about the totality, and Kathy, I hear you about the value of doing this, but I think what the issue is that the prospective SDRP complainant is only going to know that a particular domain name was registered during the Sunrise period, assuming we go in this direction of making that public. There's no requirement that the trademark owner has to put up a website or do anything further. So when you mention, I think it would be helpful when you mention that, I think you sort of mentioned like a prima facie case or something like that. I just don't know what that would entail. I mean, other than here was the mark that was registered during the Sunrise period, when you go to the TMCH, I just don't see what other information the registrant can provide. It's basically a hunch that this is not a valid trademark. And so by opening it up, even on a single basis, that could be easily gained because you could just bring multiple claims and after a sufficient amount of time, you would have all the records in the clearinghouse. So if there is a way to address that, you know, I think it'd be a good idea to flesh it out some more. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudio. Now, I guess that goes back to the question of standing. I don't think any one party would likely have standing to pursue every Sunrise registration ever issued. But then again, as I said, we haven't discussed standing. I'm not exactly sure what the standing is. But I think Claudio has an answer coming from Kathy, so I'll turn to Kathy.
Oh, hand down, I think there's a way to address it, and I think we should think about this and kind of work it out. And I'd rather take it offline and see if I could give something up to, you know, share something on the thread. Thanks.
Thank you. I see that there's a long-standing staff hand up from Mary Wong, so I will go to Mary and complain about Zoom's multiple windows some other time. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. This is Mary from staff. And so this is actually probably an opportune time to turn to us because of the discussion that was going on. What I wanted to do was to clarify the response that I gave earlier when I said that we're not aware of a single published source of all the SDRPs. I think it's important to add that the SDRPs are available, it's just not all listed on one page per registry operator. How you find them is that you go to the new GTLD startup page that ICANN maintains, which has all the Sunrise and other periods, you know, claims periods, LRPs, and so forth. And then from that page for each registry operator, if you click on them, you can go to another page for that RO that lists the documents provided by that registry operator. For some of these registry operators, the SDRP is linked and provided as a specific document, and then you'll see it obviously on that second page. For some, it's provided as part of a single document that includes all other information about their sunrise periods and other startup issues. Then you have to go into that document to find the SDRP. So in other words, the SDRPs are there. They're just not super obvious. They're definitely not listed in one place, in one page. You know, this is the operator and this is the SDRP. It's not as simple as that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Very helpful. I'm sorry you had to wait to say that. I guess what's also not available is a one place where all SDRP decisions are listed. I guess, you know, if the forum had handled any, they may be listed on their site, but apparently, although they're a provider, they haven't handled any. So that's the other question. I don't think there's an answer that's even, you know, as nifty as the one you just gave for how to find the actual policies. So that's, you know, raises, you know, an issue. My personal gut feeling in listening to this is that the SDRP definitely has growing pains as a DRP. So I think that, you know, there's certainly some issues I think we've uncovered here that could make it better, more often used, and not even getting to the issue of publicity. But there's a number of kind of flow issues here that require some analysis. So it's 3:15 and we haven't yet gotten to the two proposals. So I would propose to turn to those proposals at least briefly before we call the end of this call. Otherwise, our goal of finishing ahead of time and under budget will be threatened. So maybe we could put up the first of George's two, I believe it would be number two. If I'm not mistaken, proposal number two. Here it is up in front of you all. And this is somewhat germane to this discussion of the moment. Basic proposal is that all details of any trademark relied upon to secure a sunrise registration shall be made public in order to permit utilization of the SDRP. Details should include all information provided to TMCH. So that is the suggestion here. Seems like our discussion is somewhat dovetailed with this. We've discussed, you know, some way for somebody to see the underlying record or the underlying trademark. Maybe not, you know, publicly, but at least, you know, some access under some purposes. If you were a potential claimant. But let's see what people have to say about this proposal, you know, in and of itself. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, no, just said I agree. It's interesting, this proposal, which I hadn't read before we came onto the call, is interesting, and maybe we should just, you know, unless there's any objection, kind of morph it into that access for legitimate challengers, some, you know, good faith challengers who need the right to act, you know, who seek to challenge based on legitimate grounds.
We could call it a unified access model, or has that been taken already?
I think that's been taken, but that's funny.
Yeah, maybe better not to call it that. In any case, I digress. Any other hands? But I agree. This looking at proposals as jumping off points. We have kind of touched on the ultimate issue that George is trying to solve for. Considered some other solutions that perhaps, you know, balance the equities that different sides see here a little bit better without creating an SDRP that you had, you know, where the only lock is one that nobody has the key for, or at least you have to kind of, you know, make a bet on what the underlying record is. Anybody else? I see Kathy's hand is still up, but I assume that's an old hand. Any other comments on George's proposal? I'll take it that no comments mean kind of that that George's proposal is here, but we've kind of moved away from it into the discussion we already had, which, you know, was kind of covered the same overall, issue with a slightly different, you know, potential solution, which we haven't quite solidified yet. Why don't we go to question four, since I'm not seeing any other hands. I mean, proposal four, sorry. I knew we should have done letters now. Note to all. Yes,
Claudia, can you read that? Could you read that one out? Because I'm not on the Zoom.
No problem. I'm getting it up in front of me here. So this is a recommendation, a little more lengthy, that if that the Sunrise should include as part of the minimum standard for SDRPs. The UNR registry substantive ineligibility clause, which basically, and I'll try to summarize on the fly, allows a challenge based on token use or non-use, where the underlying trademark registration is not the subject of actual and substantial use in commerce, or has been unused for long enough to constitute abandonment in that jurisdiction where it's registered. And the second prong of substantive ineligibility in the UNR registry world is, they call it a pretextual Sunrise registration. The domain name is otherwise a non-exclusive and generally applicable term having a primary meaning in relation to goods or services other than those for which the trade or service mark was obtained. I guess Apple would be an example of that. And the domain name is not used or under demonstrable preparation for use or held to prevent infringing use by the registrant in connection with the goods and or services on which the subject trademark registration is based. The following circumstances make without limitation constitute evidence of such. The registrant's use, licensing, or offer of licensing and use of the domain name for the primary purposes of exploiting such non-trademark primary meaning. Circumstances indicating a pattern by the registrant or in concert with others of Sunrise registrations based on formal claims of trader service mark rights in alleged marks which are otherwise non-exclusive generally applicable terms. As an aggravating factor, whether the term in question is particularly generically applicable in connection with the TLD in which the Sunrise registration was made. So apple.fruit, I guess, would be the aggravating factor. Not to pick on Apple, of course. But that is the proposal here, and that maybe that's a little bit to chew on at 3:22. We might have to pick up there next week under the stewardship of David McCauley, but at least we kind of have that one out in front of us as an idea about whether that could be considered for kind of the minimum set of grounds for the SDRP. But we have a couple of minutes before we get into our wrap up. So anybody have any comments on this one now that I've just kind of read it out?
Yeah, Craig, it's Claudio.
Yeah, Claudio, please go ahead. And I've got a hand up from Julie.
Okay, sure. And I'll keep it brief. I was just going to say that I will bandy this around the IPC, and then by next week, I'll have, you know, hopefully be able to provide more input on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your bandying. Julie, and then I've got Maxim.
Oh, hi, this is Julie Hedlund from staff. So just a staff suggestion that perhaps, since there has been quite a bit of discussion today on this
this question, and perhaps we could consider moving the discussion of the proposals with the discussion of the answers to the questions under Charter Question 6 and the possible preliminary recommendations. Perhaps we could, staff could open a thread for that discussion. That would enable the sub-team to move to Question 8 for the next meeting. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thanks, Julian. I think that's a good idea, and we really need to use both the threads and these 90 minutes in order to get our job done. And this really is one, I think, both the discussion we've had on the first, you know, major issue, and this one, which is at least teed up, I think are perfect examples of thread-ready topics. Maxim?
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. If I'm not mistaken, if we're talking about .inc with C in the end, there is no separate SDRP policy. It's just a set of policies. And it's a single document. So I'm not sure how you want to cut it. And I'm not sure we other registries have to follow the same idea of single document for every policy.
Thanks, Maxim. I guess that, you know, goes to the question of how these things are all. I don't think anybody suggested that. I think Mary was talking about what she was, you know, finding. How we could find SDRP, the policies themselves. And while it might be, now that you mention it, could be a good idea to have a more standard way of dealing with it. I think we have enough on our plate without that. So again, I know Maxim, you definitely did not suggest it, understood. So I think that, well, that brings us to 3:26. So we're kind of in the no other business portion of the meeting. I'm going to turn it back to staff to take us home, as Kurt Pritz used to say when he was chairing the EPDB.
Well, thanks so much, Greg. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So. Thank you all for joining, and thank you very much, Greg, for chairing. We will meet at the usual time on the usual day next week on Wednesday. We realize that there is the GDD meeting, but there is really no leeway, as you noted from the timeline and work plan today, to not hold a meeting. So for those who may not be able to attend, we will, of course, be capturing the discussions, and also we will open up discussion threads, so there will be continued opportunity for people to provide input, and also it's likely that at least one of the questions will probably carry over into the meeting the following week. So again, thank you all for joining, and we'll go ahead and adjourn this call and look forward to talking to at least some of you next week.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.